This is Go-to-Market Magic. And for the final episode of our first season, we're doing something a little bit different. We're taking a look back at some of the great guests and really interesting episodes that we've had the pleasure of putting together over the past year. We start out looking at sales and some of our guests who are sales leaders and are bringing some real insight and innovation into that area. Then we shift gears and we talk about customer success and the broader go-to-market strategy and execution. And then in the final segment, we go deep into enablement. In each, we give you a taste of just some of the really excellent insights from these guests. And we hope that it'll inspire you to go deeper and listen to those episodes in their entirety.
So this is the perfect episode for you. If you've only listened to a few episodes, or if you're joining us for the first time, this will give you a taste of some of the great podcast episodes that we've done over this past season. Let's get started now with sales.
Our very first episode was about modern sales excellence. So let's start there. And let's start with our very first guest, Sam McKenna. She's founder and CEO of Sam Sales Consulting, and she is an absolute wealth of experience and insight into being really, really great at sales. We talked about her approaches to prospecting and discovery and brand building and so much more. Let's hear what Sam had to say about discovery.
We either talk about ourselves for 28 minutes or we kick it off in the wrong way. Two ways. We either start down a firing range of questions that we have that are super selfish and all about us, right? How many licenses do you have? How many employees do you have? When does your contract expire? Whatever. Are you the ultimate decision maker? Figuring out BANT, all that jazz. Or we started by saying, Steve, excited to talk to you, with a flat, non-excited face. Tell me a little bit about what interested you in taking this call today. I feel like that question, and most reps are like, that's what I ask. And I'm like, don't do that anymore. I feel it's also just condescending. Like, you're like, Steve, you're welcome for me giving you time today. Tell me about how I can help you. Ugh.
Sam talks a lot about how we should really structure those calls and how we should do them differently. The other piece of what she talks about in this episode is, how do you go into that call? How do you get those calls to begin with? And part of that is doing your own discovery before you even get on the call, so you can have a more meaningful conversation when you do get that opportunity.
Absolutely. And a more human conversation. I think a thread that runs through everything Sam teaches us is to be more human. And she takes issue with that robotic approach, not only in discovery calls, but in many calls where people show up, there's no banter, they're kind of coldly saying, do we have quorum? Is it time to begin? And then here come the slides. She also takes issue with discovery as interrogation, where it's just because I, the seller, have 20 things that I want to learn about your situation and your readiness to buy, and you get nothing from it. And that's not a good experience for a buyer. And I just think that throughout this entire episode, she shone a light on a wide range of places where we can be more interesting and more human and ultimately more effective. I really enjoyed this episode.
Me too. And this is really, if you're interested in a way of approaching both prospecting, discovery calls, those first interactions that you're having with your prospect or your soon-to-be customer, hopefully, you need to listen to this episode and understand that this is actually a more comfortable and easy way to go about this whole process, especially at the front end of the sale.
Absolutely.
So keeping with the theme of sales, we went deeper into modern sales excellence when we talked to David Fisher, otherwise known as DFISH. He's the global social selling lead at SAS, which is a huge analytics firm, and he's helping their sellers really rise above the noise on LinkedIn. His area of expertise is social selling, but unlike a lot of people who are out there talking about how individuals can become better social sellers, he focuses on how to build enterprise-grade social selling teams with a capability that you need for a large company. He actually rejects the notion that social selling is about building a huge following. Listen to his take on this.
You said, most people have about 250 people they need to influence. Everything beyond that is bonus. They don't need huge reach. They need relevant and targeted engagement. They need the right people to see them. And in a world where most LinkedIn gurus or whatever are telling you how to build this massive following and go viral and all this, you're coming at it in a really different direction. Tell us why.
The idea that we need large reach and that we need to have a huge audience is really predicated on the idea that we have an offering that is very transactional. That is, and it's actually why the LinkedIn gurus often say this, right? Because they're trying to get people to buy their course, try to buy their book, come buy my online community. And numbers matter for those individuals. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Most sellers have, hey, you know, if they can get a handful of deals a year, maybe a little bigger than a handful, depending on their product and their solution, that's a win. Some sellers, if they get one good deal a year, they paid the bills and then some. And so that's why I do think this idea of having to have broad reach, there's value in it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing to pursue. For most sellers, for most people who are trying to do work on LinkedIn, it's just that next level. That's not even the second level of connections to LinkedIn. It's like the 250 or so first level connections that maybe you don't know really well, but you kind of know, well, those are the prospects. Those are the customers. Those are the people that you have to be in front of regularly. And those are the people that you have to influence. And yeah, it's a different approach than, hey, why don't you have 15,000 followers? It's like, get 1,000 followers and make sure that they're the right people, the ones that you can move business forward with.
That's such a great point that he raises. I mean, a lot of people really get over-rotated on this notion that they need to build a huge following on LinkedIn. And it's intimidating. It keeps a lot of people from getting into the game because they don't think it's attainable. And I really think that this is a message that individual sellers and sales leaders and enablement leaders really need to hear and internalize and share within their team. It's not about going viral. It's not about building this massive following. It's about being seen, heard, and understood by the right people.
Yeah, and it really takes a lot of the pressure off getting out there when you think about really only needing to reach a few hundred people who are the right people that you want to hear this message. And you really can't force it. You need to find the ability to reach the people that want to hear the message. And it doesn't have to be thousands upon thousands. You don't have to go viral. And in LinkedIn, that's so important because it's such a smaller audience we see than we see in some of the larger social platforms.
And he talks about a lot more in this episode as well. I strongly recommend this episode for anyone who's focused on social selling. He talks about data is not enough. He talks about the fact you cannot measure everything, that you need to measure what you can measure. But there's other aspects of this that you can't measure. And if we insist on only doing the things that we can easily measure, we're going to miss half of the opportunity here. He talks about finding the stories that begin to emerge as your sellers get good on social and sharing those stories far and wide. He is an absolute wealth of experience in this area. And this is a must listen episode for anyone interested in social selling. The next sales focused episode featured Seismic's own Toby Carrington. And we talked about how to effectively bring senior executives into the sales cycle, when and how and for what purpose. And of course, every organization does this to some extent, but it's often ad hoc, ill-timed, transactional in its approach, misunderstood by reps, and more. Let's hear what Toby had to say about that. What do you and other senior leaders bring into these sorts of conversations that the salespeople can't?
There's a universal truth that when one team is selling something to another person, they're a domain expert. You know, when we talk about enablement solutions or we talk about the current state of coaching and training and how teams are looking to sort of optimize their go-to-market, we have domain expertise. And so a lot of this is about insight sharing, peer-to-peer sharing, understanding what their colleagues might be doing. And that there's simply a different level of relationship and ability for someone with a role like mine to be able to talk to my peers, my colleagues, my, you know, sort of people with a similar role in our prospect or client organizations, because we and I also engage at that level with others. And so I think there's a lot of peer-to-peer insights that can be gained. There's a lot of, you know, sort of best practice sharing that indirectly happens through that process, which is simply a different level of engagement.
One of the things that we see is a big mistake of reps is they pull on the senior executives to only talk about the product or why your company or what the differentiation is. Talk a little bit about like when you think the best time to be pulled in is and what it is that the value that you have in a sales cycle itself.
So I think, Heather, there's a lot in that around timing as well, because an engagement for senior executive, if it's a Hail Mary, if it's right near the end of a cycle, if it feels transactional, is never very successful, right? Sometimes that serves a purpose in terms of reassurance or something like that towards a prospect. But honestly, it's much better when done earlier, when we are in fact not really talking about a deal or in particular, especially not a particular product or something like that. So I would say the majority of the conversations I have, if they're focused on Seismic and our organization, it's about our organization and how we work with other organizations to deliver them value on the outcomes that they're looking to deliver. It's certainly not feature function oriented.
So Toby talks about being able to relate peer to peer with the person that they're talking to. And I think that's one of the most important things that reps can do is make sure that they have the right person aligned to the right person and that the conversation has meaning as far as best practices in what those folks are doing and not focusing on how do I move the deal forward by having the senior executive sell or have the senior executive come in and close the deal.
Absolutely. I'm sure that a lot of sellers think, all right, here we go. I'm going to bring in the heavyweight closer and this deal's as good as closed now. But that's not what Toby's doing. And that's not what others in his sort of role should be doing. It's a much more strategic, relationship-based, insight delivery, peer-to-peer bonding exercise. It's not just the next step in closing this deal. And I think he was really clear about that. And another thing that I found really valuable is he talked about his criteria. I mean, we asked him about his criteria for when to step in and how does he protect his schedule? And I loved his answer because it wasn't what I expected. I thought there was going to be a materiality gate, let's call it, that he would only get involved in deals of a certain size. That wasn't his answer at all. It had much more to do with how well prepared that rep was and how he was set up to be a valuable addition to the process.
Yeah, this is a must-listen episode to anybody who either wants to or has struggled with getting their executives involved at a deeper level and a more meaningful level and making it easier both for them to have those conversations and have it be a better customer experience for your prospect.
And his final point, no Hail Marys. He said, don't ask me to come in the 11th hour in a failing deal to try to save it. That's not how this works. Great episode.
So we're going to shift gears a little bit here and talk about a broader go-to-market strategy and specifically customer success. We had a conversation with Sangram Vajray. Sangram is one of the pioneers of account-based marketing, and anyone who knows anything about ABM knows who Sangram is. These days, he's really focused on a broader go-to-market motion, and he talks to us about what it takes to go far beyond paying lip service to cross-functional alignment and impact, and he talks specifically about the role of CS. Let's take a listen.
You said CS needs to get better at teaching their customers to tell an ROI story. A lot of CS teams, at least those that I've seen, get stuck at the product feature level. You know, they're experts in the product. They're not necessarily particularly seasoned in the business. How do you get over that? I mean, is that a training function, or how do you really help your CS team to become true business advisors who can lead that ROI conversation?
What's really important for a CS person is to understand the reasons why that individual bought that particular product and what goals they had, and keep on it. A lot of times, because the point of contact changes, because priorities change, people just forget what the rules were when they started and they haven't really adjusted to it. So by the time the renewal comes, either the point of contact person is completely different or their goals have completely changed and nobody has taken the time to look at that. And even furthermore, because most CS people are a much more of a serving mindset, they're all about, hey, I'm there for you, I'm right there. They're more about responding back. They need to get out of that mode and actually recognize themselves as partners. And I'm here to really get you promoted. That's the mindset they need to have as a CS leader. And when you start thinking about like, my job is to make this person get promoted, that will mean that my job is to make this person's job better, faster, easier. So a lot of times I've seen CS people create executive decks for them, say, hey, this is what you need to present at your next. This is how you should show the overall value, not just of my product, but the overall value of what you do in your organization. That requires a lot of strategic thinking, which is why I'm so bullish on the fact that the companies that will really focus on NRR, their top set of customers, keep them, retain them, and accelerate with them, they're going to be the ones who are going to come out there not only surviving, but thriving.
Wise words from Sangram. He brings so much experience into this space. And I think it's worth emphasizing that this is an up-leveling of the customer success role. This is really building better careers for CS people over and above the fact that it's delivering more customer value. This is helping CS professionals and teams to become true business partners, deeply aligned with the outcomes that their customers value, and not just focusing, as is the case in a lot of firms, not just focusing on product use.
And this is something where, you know, the term is used a lot, buyer enablement, in new sales and new deals where you're trying to go further up the pipeline. This is buyer enablement when it really counts, making it sticky. So how do you up-level the CS conversations and the CS interaction motions to make sure that they are talking about the ROI, make sure that they're talking about how they're making the customer and also your champion successful?
Absolutely. Another part of this conversation with Sangram that was really insightful, I believe, is around alignment. Everybody talks about alignment, sales and marketing alignment, sales, marketing, and customer success alignment. Easy to say, hard to do. I put that question directly to Sangram. Like, how do we move beyond lip service to alignment and how do we make it real? I thought that he was going to say everyone needs to report up to one person. You know, a chief revenue officer or someone similar needs to own all of this. That's how you get the accountability. That wasn't his answer at all. His answer was focused on a North Star metric. It was focused on net revenue retention. It's focused on everyone getting aligned on how we deliver on that key metric. And that's how you make alignment real. And I thought that was really wise guidance. Next up, Mark Kozelklow. Now, this was a high impact episode, if ever we had one. He came in like a bull in a china shop with some powerful perspectives, and it's backed by a lot of experience. He has led large sales teams focused on outbound selling, focused on customer success, and a whole lot more. He is an expert in this space, and he really got us to question our over-reliance and our over-focus and our over-investment in new client acquisition.
Most revenue leaders grew up in the perpetual software license model or were mentored or taught by people that grew up in that model. And they brought that model to the SaaS model. And it looks like this, grow at all costs. That's what we just left for the last 10 years. Send more money top of funnel. Get demand gen to get more leads. I need more SDRs. Send more emails. Get me more deals. That is a perpetual license software mentality. Those are the rules of perpetual license software. The rules of SaaS are very different. If you give recurring impact, you get recurring revenue. And we suck at getting recurring impact because we spend all of our time as revenue leaders talking about the top of funnel and not the right side of the bow tie post sales. So once you help people explain that, that's what's going on, that's a problem. And in 1999 was the very first CSM. And guess what CSMs were used to doing? Support. Guess what most CSMs still do? support.
Yeah, reactive.
So gotta change
reactive it. Inbound support.
That's exactly right. We got to change it. So that's like some of the arguments that I can put in front of a revenue leader that I think other people need to put in front of revenue leaders and be like, listen, we need to stop being crazy and putting money and time into something that's over-optimized. There's not much value in spending time with it. You're not going to increase it by 10% anymore. You're going to increase it by 0.1%, a tenth of a percent. Versus you can get a 10% increase in your retention rates by doing small little fixes because the fruit is just so low hanging and those CSMs are running around with their hair on fire most of the time.
I love this episode for many reasons, but Mark delivers a passionate perspective in a way that really sticks with you. When he talks about the difference between recurring revenue versus recurring impact and how we want one, but we're not very good at the other, which causes the two to come together. It's a very practical advice and he's very passionate in the way that he delivers it. He also has a conversation with us around the bringing together of the promise makers before the sale and the promise keepers after the sale and how you need to think about those in a continuous line and how that works. To me, the conversation that we had was broad reaching and very practical in the way that he presented the information.
That step staircase approach that he talked about to value delivery really stuck with me. And time to value is something that everyone knows is important, but we usually misconstrue that as time to all the value.
Yes.
You know, how long is it going to take to get to all of the value of what I just bought? And we've all seen these long and painful implementation cycles where it's been a year since the contract was signed and we're still not up and running and people are questioning things. Some people have left the organization. Other people have joined and they don't even know what we bought or why. And you get in this quagmire of failure to deliver value. And Mark gives us a really practical approach to how to piece that out. As he says, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And he breaks it down into small incremental value delivery that delights customers. I mean, it drives retention, it drives upsell, it drives cross-sell, and it drives customer satisfaction. I have gone back and listened to this episode several times, and I always seem to learn something new from Mark.
Yeah. So if you're interested in understanding that entire go-to-market cycle and also a different way of thinking about how do you make your product sticky and how do you even leverage the psychology behind that incremental impact, this is really a great episode to tap into. So we've talked about sales. We went deep there. And we talked about the broader go-to-market motion, especially CS. Now we're shifting to our core, as people think of it, as enablement. One of the guests that we had on is somebody that I know and love, Dave Lichtman. He specializes, and he's one of the only firms out there that specializes in recruiting enablement leaders, specifically for enablement positions. He came to us with some interesting perspectives, and one of them was around how you should be thinking about, as a leader, hiring an enablement leader, what you should really be looking for. Let's take a listen.
I think my biggest coaching to them would be, you know, start to think about the complexion of the team differently. And I would start to say, like, thinking about a hybrid enablement function. And when I say hybrid, I don't mean work from home, work from the office hybrid. I mean FTEs and hyper-specialized contractors who you bring in there for discrete jobs, discrete projects that they do. Because my thinking is that type of approach, it's a whole new way of thinking about enablement as a motion, and it unlocks a lot of doors.
I love that general contractor model, as Dave puts it. The idea that the enablement leader does not have to have deep expertise in every little element of enablement. They need to understand the business needs. They need to understand what has to happen, and then they need to be able to identify the right talent to deliver on that. And sometimes that talent is going to be a full-time employee. Sometimes it's going to be, as he said, a hyper-specialized contractor who comes in to do a particular job. It, just like the contractors bringing in the plumber, bringing in the electrician, bringing in the carpenter, bringing in the waterproofing expert. These are not necessarily full-time jobs, and bringing in that absolute expert at the right time may be the path to tremendous success.
Absolutely. And, you know, I love that perspective because it really builds the perspective of being an enablement professional, not somebody who specializes in a particular sales methodology. You know, you are somebody who is the leader of the enablement process. And part of that also pulls into what we talked about in this episode, which is charter. And nobody ever says, hey, I love doing a charter. It's my favorite thing to do. And the most important thing is you need to have it before you regret not having it. Because a year from now, when that leader who brought you in with all these grand goals says, why haven't you done X, Y, and Z? And you don't have a charter, you have nothing to point to. So David talks a little bit about why you absolutely have to have one, even if it doesn't seem like the most important thing on your list right now.
Our next enablement guest is Paul Norford. Many of you know him as Norf. What a fascinating guy. He brings so much energy and so much creative thought to this space. It was an absolute pleasure speaking with him. And where we really started was, he calls himself both an evangelist as well as an enablement leader. And so we questioned him, is this two jobs or is this one? If it's one, how do these things work together and why? Let's listen to what he had to say about that and more.
Well, I think from the perspective of understanding, you know, where you've come from and your past, you've got an engineering past, you've got experience in radio, and you're an enabler, and you're an evangelist, all of those things put together, most enablers don't formally see themselves as evangelists, at least externally, but they might be doing that internally to try to get the entire go-to-market team, all those customer-facing roles, to get excited about what they do, the stories that they're telling. But you do it both, I think it sounds like, internally and externally.
Yes.
In a people situation.
Yes, yes, correct. I don't know whether you would call me an outlier. I'm not sure. would you?
Possibly, yeah.
So the one thing that struck me is when it comes to enablement and enabling our teams, it's certainly down to the team that I am responsible for to enable our sales organization. Because we're a B2B company, what about our channel? How do we enable our channel? So one of the things that I looked at and kind of dialed into quite quickly is, if our enablement is good enough for us internally, why can't we use it for our external channel partners as well? And if you think about our channel partners, when they're selling for Avanti, they're an extension of our sales team. So why can't we enable them at the same time? And yeah, that's the view that I hold. And in fact, that's the view that our team holds as well. So when we develop enablement content, we actually develop it for our partner community in mind. And then we almost make it, we call it kind of additive enablement, where we add the internal elements to what we build, but we build for our partners. We communicate for our partners and then add the internal elements afterwards.
So when I heard Norf talking about both enablement and evangelism in the same breath, I thought, how can this be? This just doesn't compute in my head. Something doesn't feel right here, which is one of the reasons we had him on the show, because we wanted to do a deeper dive. We thought it was an interesting topic. But it became really clear that if you start with the channel partners, the partners that are outside your organization, and you're developing enablement from the outside in, it makes total sense that you have to have both of those roles in the same person.
Yeah, you can't mandate their attention. You cannot demand that your partners consume your enablement content the same way that you can internally. You have to earn it. And that forces you to be better. It forces you to be more entertaining, more innovative, more interesting, more compelling in many ways. That was a real aha light that went on for me listening to Norf talk about this.
Absolutely. And so if you are either now enabling your channel partners, you want to hear an interesting perspective on it, or if somebody is asking you to now you need to expand your role and scope into this area. This is a must listen. Really good information.
He also had some good insights into measurement. I'd check it out for that reason as well. He talked about the fact that you really can't measure everything and you have to be okay with that because otherwise you're going to fail to do some really important things. A lot of wisdom in that episode from our friend Norf.
So next we talked to Giuliana Stancampiano. That name may sound familiar to you. She is the CEO of Oxygen Learning, but she's also the ex-president of the board for the Sales Enablement Society, now known as the Revenue Enablement Society. So she has been ingrained in the enablement industry and function for quite some time, both as an insider and an outsider. Her organization helps enablement organizations do learning better. And we had her on the show to talk about the role of AI, specifically in the learning function. Let's take a listen.
I think that from my perspective, the who knows the content best is always the SME. And typically you have the learning person who knows learning really well, and they pull content from the SME and then create the learning. If they have either access to the SME content through AI, they could do that still. And I definitely think the reverse is possible with if the SME has access and the right ways in which to talk to the AI to build it, it can help from that perspective because they're going to know the content and what they want somebody to know and be able to do out of it versus the learning person, to your point.
So that's interesting because part of those SMEs, especially in the enablement space when it's customer-facing roles, are people actually doing the job. And for a few years now, there's been this drumbeat around peer-to-peer learning. You learn from the people who are doing it really well. But the people that are doing it really well can most times not do much more than a video from a learning perspective. So that opens up a lot of possibilities of making it really super simple for high performers to, you know, be able to kind of do a brain dump and have that become something that's meaningful learning.
Yeah, I think as long as they can do the brain dump, I think sometimes that's the hardest part for the SME, right? And that's where we ask a lot of the questions. It's like, how do you do this? How do you do that? And when you start asking those questions, they're able to explain it to you. I think there are a lot of content SMEs in other areas, though, that have a lot documented about what they do and how they do it or how they foresee it happening, right, within the company. And that's where it's going to be the easiest to pull. But I think in a lot of the customer-facing roles, it can be there's a lot of unconscious competence and people that have a harder time explaining to you what it is that they do because they just do it very naturally. And so having somebody that can interview and tease out what that is, that can be put into the learning or put into the AI is going to be really important.
This was a real mind-expanding episode for me. Not just talking about what's possible today with AI, but what's going to be possible tomorrow. And she talked a lot, as you heard in the clip, about this idea of how do we capture that institutional knowledge, that unconscious expertise that lives within so many of our people. And how do we get it out and get it into other people's hands in an easily consumable and usable way? Because today that's hard in a lot of ways. It's hard for the subject matter expert to be able to bring that out in useful ways. It's also hard for the learning and development and enablement professionals who are not experts in that space to really understand what's the most critical aspects of it. And if AI can step in there and play a critical role, that can be game changing.
It absolutely can. And so much of what we've seen AI focus on in the learning space is how do you make it easier to create lessons? So how do you dump a bunch of stuff in and make a lesson out of it? Or how do you do an auto summary or create those quizzes, which is great. It's how do you make the enabler's job easier? How do you make the learning professional's job easier? But the big thing is how do you make the learning content better? And what Giuliana focuses on in this episode is how do you use AI to get better, deeper information, to take stuff that subject matter experts know, but they don't know how to articulate? How do you get that into a place where it can be articulated in a meaningful way to your learners? She also talked about the balance between not going too fast into AI and hoping that it's going to do everything for you, but getting started fast. What can you do now? What are the low-hanging fruit pieces that you can get? And that was a really interesting conversation that we had as well.
Absolutely. There's a ditch on both sides of the road. We can drive into one ditch if we run headlong into AI without strategy and without guardrails. But there's a ditch on the other side of the road that we can veer into if we're sitting back and we're afraid to take action and we let our competitors get well ahead of us. So she had some good insight and guidance on how we stay in the middle of that road and don't veer into the ditches.
Don't get run over and don't get thrown into the ditch, right?
That's right. Yeah. Really, really good episode for sure. So glad we had her on.
So we just covered the highlights from season one in sales, the broader go-to-market, including customer success, and of course, enablement. If these were interesting to you, we encourage you to listen to the entire season.
Find us on YouTube, find us on the podcast platform of your preference,